Now entering Nerdist.com.
Big Pop Fun.
It's Big Pop Fun with Tom Wilson. Tom talks about life, showbiz, art, and more from the Wilson World Studios located in California, about a half-hour drive through traffic to the sparkling Pacific Ocean, where it's only $7 to park. Here's Tom.
Before we get into the podcast, let me do a commercial for myself. I'm at the Comedy Club of Jacksonville, Florida at 11,000 Beach Boulevard. This is September 26th, 27th, 28th. This, for you people who are listening to it live and now in 2013, is of very, very great importance. If you're anywhere near Jacksonville, come on down to the Comedy Club of Jacksonville, September 26th, 27th, and 28th. If you're listening from another time, another place, boy, we had fun there. Thanks for tuning in. People don't tune in anymore. Thanks for downloading. Thanks for pressing play. Thanks for listening to the meat of this and fast-forwarding through this stuff. But this is the Big Pop Fun podcast, and I'm Tom Wilson, your lovely, charming, and, you know, I don't know, bigger than you think when you meet me or smaller. It seems to go 50% right down the middle. But my physical size, I don't know. People, I guess they think of me as a size before anything else. And haven't we all done that with the great artists? The great novelist, John Updike. I always thought, 5'10", before I thought of his books. But people think of me mostly for my size, I guess, because I meet people and they all say, wow, you're bigger than I thought you would be. Or, man, you're not as big as I thought you'd be. You're smaller than I thought you'd be. And I respond by saying, thanks, I have a size that I've kept this size for quite a long time. Thank you. Let's discuss my physical size more, because I find that fascinating. Hey, thanks. Thanks for stopping by. If you're new to us, consider subscribing to the podcast. If you've been here before, welcome. Well, hey, thanks. So I want to thank the person who knows who they are. I sold another painting off the BigPopFun.com website. I didn't sell the biggest painting I've ever painted. I sold the second biggest painting that I've ever painted, which is about, what was it, 54, six feet, 5.5 feet by 5.5 feet. A big, big, great big painting of a Viewmaster. The old Viewmasters with the reels that you'd put in and see the three-dimensional pictures. I used to love those things. And I looked them up on eBay, and they're still there, and people collect the reels now and everything. Remember, you'd put them in. I have some great Viewmaster reels of the 50s in Las Vegas, and with slot machines and women in those 50s bathing suits diving off the high dive at the Riviera Hotel in three dimensions with the desert behind them. They're really, really lovely. And in talking about them to people, they would just, oh yeah, I remember that. I had Peter Pan, where they have the little models and stuff, and they would shoot it in 3D. So I made these paintings. I made about three or four paintings of Viewmasters. So the painting is actually just the Viewmaster heroically lit by directional lighting. And really, the painting is not about anything except your experience of looking into a Viewmaster. So I made this giant painting of a Viewmaster, and someone contacted me and just purchased it. And it's signed, sealed, delivered. It's theirs. I've sold quite a number of paintings since I cut the prices. I mean, on a previous podcast, if you listen, yeah, I cut the prices of all the paintings because galleries are kind of going out of business left and right. So I was able to cut the prices of my paintings, and people are buying them, and I appreciate that very much, because that helps put the wind in the Big Pop Fun podcast sales. I promoted the work of my friend Eric, E-R-I-C Merrill, M-E-R-R-E-L-L. Look him up on the web. Beautiful paintings. Beautiful. Follow these guys. See what they're doing. A friend and a former art teacher of mine of a long time, Arthur Eggerly, A-R-T-H-U-R, E-G-E-L-I. Arthur's from a huge family of painters. I would love to have him on the podcast. Family of painters. His grandfather was a painter. His father's a painter. He's a painter. His sisters, cousins, uncles, everybody. A family of painters, which is fascinating. So look up Arthur. I think it's arthuregley.com, maybe ericmerrill.com. Look up a couple of my buddies who paint. Just look up artists. That's what I ask you to support art wherever you are, whether someone's making jewelry or paintings or a show, whether they're writing plays or putting on a small musical performance at a local high school. People are putting their hearts and their imaginations out on the line in front of other people, and I just think that we should try to support them. Just see what they're doing, take them in before we're all swallowed by our screens. But welcome to the podcast, another magical sleigh ride of enchantment and wonder, as we hold onto the sleigh with our white knuckles. So, yeah, well, so often we're fearing the worst, it's so desperate to steer from trouble in our lives. But trouble is resilient, isn't it? It can find you, especially when you're trying to hide from it so desperately with white knuckles on the sleigh ride. But if we let the magical sleigh ride take us to a place where we can really see our lives, we'll see that we live better than the pharaohs of Egypt. We have hot and cold running water. They have faucets. You just walk up to it. I think I'd like hot water. Psh, it goes on. Oh, no, it's a little hot for me. Cold water. Psh, goes on. And let's face it, it's drinkable. Who did you know is dying of using a water fountain? No one. It's clean. We have plumbing people that simply, hey, we have plumbing that removes some of the less desirable aspects of being a human being. And their plumbing just takes it. It's gone. Takes it away. We have food and clothing and shelter. Now, I know Louis C.K. said it famously on Letterman. But believe me, my parents said it way before Louis. And anybody with kids has said it too. But the fact is, whoever gets credit for it, whether it's my dad saying, well, my dad was raised in an orphanage, and to him, there were so many miracles, and ice cream was something that was throughout his life was just, how can such a thing be made? And now we just literally eat too much of it. But Louis C.K. said it, and so it's interesting to me. It's his bit now. Now you say, boy, things are better than you think, because, I mean, we have comfortable beds, and we're not being attacked by animals. Oh, yeah, Louis C.K. Well, okay, I get it, yeah. He said it on Letterman. But look, all parents say it. We have to slow down the sleigh ride and look at our lives to see that, things are okay. We have troubles, but we'll get through it. All of us together, all earbud to earbud across America. Oh, never mind. Okay, I'm waxing a little too poetic, as I do on these solos. Back from Myrtle Beach. I've been very many places, as I always am on the podcast. I've been where? I was in Chicago, then in Philadelphia. I was in Charlotte, North Carolina, Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Hey, Myrtle Beach was still very warm and very humid. I went down there to do a corporate event to perform for Coca-Cola and some movie theater owners. So I went to Myrtle Beach to a hotel, which shall remain nameless, but it's one of those, well, we have a 147-acre compound. It was a resort hotel, one of those things. Now, have you ever stayed at a resort hotel, but just getting to your room, because the place is so huge and they have bridges and walkways and you're rolling your thing. But getting to your room is such a long hike and incredible hassle that by the time you get to your room, you actually need a few days in a resort. Well, that was like this one. It was a very huge resort. And I got to my room in order to get ready for the show, just bathed in sweat and accosting passersby, just saying, how big is this place? Where am I getting? Where's my room? I did the show for Coca-Cola. Coke, the real thing. Coke, I think Coke had, Coke had hired me in order to make all of the movie theater owners, happy about their relationship with Coke. Coke adds life. Coke is the real thing. And Coke, they actually told me, because I was saying, Coke's the real thing. Hey, people, Coke adds life. And the Coke people were like, hey, Coke opens happiness. That's the new Coke phrase. Coke opens happiness. The thing was, I didn't know happiness was closed. And hey, folks, let me wax poetic. If your happiness is closed, you have the key. Not necessarily Coke. Now, I love Coke. I'm a Coke person. And Coke, on some days, Coke can open happiness. But if your happiness is closed, hey, go in your heart, get the key, and open it up, baby. Then when it's open, have a Coke. I did this show. Did I mention this on the podcast? Look, I'm telling stories on the podcast now for you people who've been here before. I'm telling stories that I suppose maybe I've told before. I'm not looking at it as repeating myself. I'm looking at this podcast as a fugue. Let's call it a story fugue. Like the musical concept of a fugue, where a melody happens, the same melody happens underneath that in a different time afterward. All of the notes fold into each other to make a wonderful musical tapestry. Let's call this a story fugue, where I might be telling you something that I've already told you, but there will be nuance. Okay, probably not nuance, but there will be something different about it that will make it fugue-like. And though it might be boring to you, stick with it, because it worked for Johann Sebastian Bach. So it will happen for me. Though people, when they meet me, they're not mentioning my fugue. They're mentioning my physical size, as I talked about before. Coke was happy with the show. Coke was happy with the show, and I was happy with Coke. The people were very nice, and I thank everybody down there in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, in the largest resort hotel complex that I've ever been a part of, that I actually had to train for a triathlon in order to get back to the entrance of the hotel to get out of there and to fly from Myrtle Beach to Newark, New Jersey, which was completely socked in. When you're flying into Newark, Newark is maybe my favorite airport to fly into, because often the flight path takes you right down the east side of Manhattan and past all the buildings, and there's the Chrysler Building, and there's the Empire State Building, and there's this new Liberty Tower that they're doing in downtown Manhattan. Often you can see the Statue of Liberty, and that's what we did. It was stormy. It was completely socked in, but we're landing. We're landing in Newark, and there's all of Manhattan surrounded by clouds, and there's the Statue of Liberty, and I'm looking at it, and people from other countries, they're on the plane, and they're looking out the window, speaking in other languages about, that's the Statue of Liberty. They're just thrilled beyond comprehend, that's the Statue of Liberty. And the sun peeks out from between the clouds and lights up the sides of the buildings of Manhattan and the Statue of Liberty. Just as we're about to touch down to Newark, we must be 50 feet above the runway. We just raise up. We go, the pilot points the plane back up. We didn't do a touch and go, but we go back up, because we were hit with a wind shear of some kind, some wind warning, because it was very stormy. And he gets on and says, well, folks, we have to take it again. We have to take two on the landing, because we had a wind shear warning and the wind was too high. So we're going to come around again. So maybe some of us were missing connections. Everyone was worried because it was stormy and a bumpy flight. But we got a whole second take on seeing Manhattan and the Statue of Liberty one more time. It was gorgeous. We went down the east side of Manhattan one more time. The storms were getting worse, so I got to witness a gigantic lightning bolt just hit the center of Manhattan, and we landed in Newark. safe and sound, just as Newark had closed down for a couple or 3 hours because of electrical storms. And all the planes were late, and everyone was crazy and everything. But we finally did take off through Newark. I got a window seat, which I wasn't crazy about, but so I was cramped. I mean, when I get a window seat, I just apologize to my row members. I'm sorry. I mean, I realize that aisle person, I'm pushing you out, and I'm pushing out the middle person. Look, this is my size, as people who meet me can attest. This is what I'm taking the window, and I squeezed in. I was folded into a like an origami swan of some kind. I was folded in seven places, incredibly comfortable. Incredibly comfortable, incredibly uncomfortable, pardon me. But Newark to LAX, we went all day across the entire country with these storm clouds everywhere, across the entire country. We had to go down to Florida and then across the country through the most beautiful tableau of clouds you could ever imagine. Giant thunderheads of dark gray and just almost purple with the sun hitting the sides of miles and miles of peach and pink ones and sort of lavender ones and giant black ones all the way across the country. So I was folded in eight places, but I looked at those clouds and I thought, you know, Leonardo da Vinci never saw clouds like I'm seeing today. And Michelangelo didn't. Vermeer never saw clouds. Any artist, no one ever saw clouds like that in their lives. Like the clouds I got to see one day in my life. But before Myrtle Beach, I had gone to Philadelphia where my sister lives. And my entire family, brothers, sisters, everybody, my sister's house is there. She hasn't been well. And I decided to visit before going down to Myrtle Beach for my long hike at the hotel, just to visit for a while and to be my normal attempted comic relief, which sometimes works and a lot of times doesn't. But we had a very nice visit. And while I was there, at one point, everyone was sleeping and I woke up early. And I made myself a cup of tea early morning and I took it out to the deck. She has a wooden deck out behind her house. You know, while the sun's coming up before it got too hot. Now, my sister's house kind of backs onto a hill, small backyard, chain link fence. Then the hill goes up and it's kind of this slope that goes up behind her house to a cemetery, which is very visible out the back of my sister's house. Now, I'm starting to revel in the morning in the cool air. And I looked at all the headstones in the sunrise, you know, the cold side dark gray, the one side kind of gold with the sun. And I thought, well, that's not the most hopeful scene, you know, while having morning tea and communing with nature. Before I got into all, alas, poor Yorick, I know him well. And being abutting a cemetery there is a memento mori, as they say, from paintings where they would have a skull or a skeleton or some remembrance of our mortality, which is fine, but, you know, not the best that particular morning. But I concentrate on the flowers, which were blooming in her flower boxes, these tiny white flowers cascading over the wooden railing and all sorts of red and yellow and blue flowers with the surrounding trees. If you're in Pennsylvania, you know of Pennsylvania, you've been through it, you know the trees in Pennsylvania just at the peak of green, September green, every leaf as full as the end of summer as they could possibly be, so full of green and life. They're almost ready for that first chill and the signal for whatever lockup in the tree happens, that signal for the leaves to turn their golds and reds and fall to the ground, allowing the tree to, I don't know, do whatever trees really do. I wish I studied forestry or something, you know, where the tree sleeps or saves its energy or finally gets a rest from the from pushing life into the leaves and preparing for thousands of new leaves, new buds of green in the spring. Anyway, I sipped tea and was all, you know, exulting in the life and the sunlight and the trees and the flowers and the air. And I noticed these small wisps, these small tan little tendrils of some kind waving in the breeze at my feet. Little, what are they, seed pods? Some kind of wispy seed that I'm unfamiliar with that fell off the trees or whatever. I looked down and they're, you know what, near my feet, there were bits of these things. They're caught in the splinters and cracks of the deck. And some had blown into these tiny knots at the legs of the table. And then I was hit with a wave of recognition. They weren't wisps of seeds. They were hairs. They were some of my sister's hair that had been falling out from the effects of chemotherapy. And I remember that my brother had taken her out to the deck a couple days before to shave her head. Well, as you can imagine, that's a pretty big revelation when you're sipping English breakfast tea and you're trying to celebrate God's creation in the sunrise. And of course, I'm filled with the same exhausted bitterness that I'm filled with far too often in a flash. Because, you know, come on, man. You've got to be kidding me. It's not about me, but what is life, man? You know, the sunlight and the flowers, the bees working in the flowers and the beautiful trees. But yes, that's it. Something, I don't think, I don't think it was my heart or my brain to tell. I think it was something outside of myself that said, that's life. Right there. I mean, if you're waiting for the cemetery or the chemo hair not to be in the picture, you're going to miss life. That is what it is. Oh, not all chemo. No. No. But real life is a significant view of the cemetery as the painters would paint in the Middle Ages. And the hair falling out because of chemo, and the flowers, and the bees, and the leaves in the trees, and the beautiful air, and the sunshine. That's life. Not some, you know, computer-aided, commercial-filled. Hey, I'm not judging. I live it. The computer-aided, commercial-filled, whatever. Nose-jobbed, photoshopped, whatever. Fake version of life. Anyway, I am a crazy podcaster, man. But I'll tell you, that last third of my cup of tea, my friend, honestly, it wasn't as sweet as it was when I'd started. But the fact is, it had a lot more flavor. It did. Because life, you know, real life with the cemetery view and the hair and the bees and everything, it is a complex flavor for a sophisticated palate. I know that's not some great revelation. I know that people who have lived life like yourself know what I'm talking about while I'm saying it. And it wasn't even, you know, years ago, my wife had cancer. My wife is a cancer survivor. My wife had a very, very significant bout with cancer a number of years ago, as I've talked about on the podcast, Story Fugue. But at that time, I was asked to conduct a band which was one of the dreams of my adult life since I was drum major of the band when I was in high school. And some of the most joyous experiences I ever had was conducting a marching band, playing a beautiful march with tubas and trombones and clarinets and flute, and drums and cymbals, and conducting that. What a thrill. So I was always looking for some opportunity to do it one more time. So a friend of mine was the musical director of a wind ensemble at a college nearby here in Southern California. And they were having a summer concert series at a park, you know, where people bring their folding chairs and everything. And we talked about the fact that I'd been a drum major, and oh boy, that'd be a thrill sometime. And he asked me, would I come to the summer concert series and conduct a John Philip Sousa march while my wife was undergoing a period of, you know, five surgeries, all kinds of, you know, with four small children and chemotherapy and radiation and all kind, and just in the absolute, I mean, the world, my friend, was molten lava. And he asked me to conduct John Philip Sousa's Liberty Bell March. The Liberty Bell, Philadelphia, my hometown. It's my favorite march. And I was dumbfounded. How could such a wonderful, fun, celebratory event happen exactly when I'm sadder than I've ever been in my life? Man, I was sad. I went because you can't pass it up. But to be honest, my heart wasn't in it. I thought, boy, if only this had happened like a year ago or 2 years ago, I would have had so much fun. But I was going to conduct it using my low-level celebrity, you know, to get on stage and do something that was supposed to be fun. Because, hey, I am a very low-level celebrity, and usually I don't use it. But if it's to get up and conduct a Sousa march, why not? So the day came, and my wife brought her folding chair, and the kids were on blankets like all the other families. And I got on stage as my beautiful family and my wife, the cancer patient, cheered, and everyone else passed tubs of potato salad to each other, each of them living real life in their own ways, but eating potato salad on a beautiful afternoon. So I begin. I'm standing up there. The thrill of a life, you know, the band is there. Everyone is ready. I have the baton. And I conducted. I did. Maybe a little too quickly, but, you know, I wanted it to be spirited. I wanted it to, hey, we're going to do a march. Let's do a march. I was tired of watching Sousa marches played, you know, like everyone's a little tired of hearing them at summer concert series. You know, so I counted off. How does it, Liberty Bell? And boom, we were off. And while I was conducting, I was hit by the same dichotomy as when I was on my sister's deck. But this is years ago. I was hit. I'm conducting the march, and I think this is absurd. My wife is fighting for her life. My children are reeling. Our lives are in tumult, and I'm conducting the Liberty Bell March in a park? Well, you'd better believe I was conducting the Liberty Bell March. So right there, yeah. That was it, right in the middle of the tornado with 100 or so musicians and a park full of people. Every one of those people, as I said, fighting a battle of their own, just like you are listening to me, trying to survive and love and celebrate for just as long as they can. Man, I broke a sweat, baby. The tubas came in. The tubas, you know, I'm a tuba player, and they have a great part in Liberty Bell. Ba, 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 ba. Well, it's not exactly proper conductor etiquette, but as that part was coming to the Liberty Bell March, I yell over the music at the tuba players. I literally yell at them, come on, give it to me. And they did. Ba, 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 ba. Well, like all of us do in every moment without even knowing it, I was conducting life itself. And And I'm glad I did. And my wife is now okay. And my sister is okay, though things are difficult. And I hope you're okay. But I hope we all go out there and just conduct a symphony. Thanks so much for listening. I appreciate it very much. Hey, if you liked it, consider telling a friend about it or subscribing to the podcast. Thanks to Emily Wilson for all of her help producing. Thanks to Chris, Katie, everybody at Nerdist Industries. Thanks to McPherson Guitars for helping me on the live show. And please, come back again, will you? Thanks. Bye.
Nerdist.com